Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Martin and Tommy said they were on when Martin actually got out hustled at the pool hall by some random woman. And if you don't know what that's about, I advise you to please get your knowledge up on one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, that being Martin Lawrence's Martin. This is episode 10, I believe.
I think this is 10.
Yeah, episode 10 of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast. I am your host, and alongside me is my illustrious co-host.
It's Deontay, y'all.
We can be found on all social media platforms, or at least the top three, on Facebook at Wrestling POV Podcast, on Instagram and Twitter at MMA POV Podcast, and we can be heard on the following streaming platforms: iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podbean, and Spotify. And for those of you out there who can't get enough of the baritone voice of one Deontay, there is another platform in which this brother can be heard. You mind sharing with the people where else you can be heard, sir?
Yes, as we all can hear, my deep Barry White-like voice. yeah, absolutely. So the Made You Look podcast, Made is spelled M-A-D-E, the letter U-L-L-O-K. Podcast, and that's available also in Podbean as well as the Apple Podcast app on your phones and on your iPads or whatever you use for your Apple products. Absolutely, man. We discuss politics, political policy, mostly current events, connecting political policy to current events as it pertains to African Americans specifically, but we don't just talk about only African Americans. We do discuss, you know, worldly issues as well. So thanks, man. I appreciate you plugging that.
Oh, already, man. Listen, we go back to the year of what, 1997. So, you know, when you, yeah, 23 years we go back. So knowing that, yeah, I know, right? But we look good. You know what I mean? We wear our ages well, brother.
Listen, 23 years.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Whew.
That's bananas.
Kids on
That's
the yard.
Bananas. Yeah, on the yard of the Delaware State University, home of
DSU,
the Hornets.
DSU.
Yeah.
Approach a storm.
So, to know you for as long as I have and to see how, you know, you just maintain your hustle and your determination to put your stamp on the media one way or the other, I got to say I'm proud of you. You did not give up. You persevered,
right,
man. And
right back at you.
I just love what you're doing. I appreciate that.
Man, right back at you, man. You remember them days we was at, you know, driving to the Washington Informer newspaper office trying to get some freelance work.
Yes.
And there really was nothing available, so we just kind of, it was just pretty much like giving us scraps.
Absolutely.
Know, time. So, yeah, man, the hustle always been there. You know, it just hasn't been very profitable, but it's always been there.
Right. But it's always been there. And that was finally coming to fruition. And with it actually, you know, hitting the surface, you know, the profit will come forth. So I'm just excited for the things that are coming forth, you know, from you and I moving forward. Believe in the dream and live the dream. That's the key. So, speaking of things that came forward, we had an awesome fight card this past Saturday night by way of UFC Fight Night, Poirier versus Hooker. And that actually is going to be our MMA hot topic of the week. I have to say, although I was skeptical about UFC, you know, bringing forth a product as a result of COVID-19, I must say, being, you know, in the smaller octagon, free of an audience, and being able to hear everything from the snaps of the strikes to, you know, the guidance from the coaches and the announcers, where the fighters themselves even say they can hear the guidance and the analysis that the fighters provide. These cards have been nothing short of excellent. I haven't seen a bad card yet since UFC's COVID-19 era has taken shape or taken place. What's your thought on the UFC COVID-19 era fight wise?
I mean, I can clearly see why the sport has pretty much leaped boxing as the most popular combat sports, combat sport. If not America, you know, at least America, but probably throughout, you know, the world, it has leaped boxing because of these fights, these cards that we're getting, man. This is truly like legendary stuff, especially that Poirier fight. Oh my God.
Oh man. Well, without further ado, let's get right into it. So, Dustin Poirier defeated Dan Hooker via unanimous decision. What I took from it was, first and foremost, it's a fight of the year candidate. You even have some who say that it has surpassed Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Zhang Weili. I'm not willing to go that far yet. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, set some time apart to watch both fights back to back and then, you know, come to my determination then. Hooker came out the gates in a way that was alarming to Poirier. I mean, he had Poirier in serious trouble. So much so that this weekend I was multitasking a bit. So in addition to actually covering the fight, I had saw my two nephews who I haven't seen in a couple of years, Tyson and Tajay. Tyson is 7, Tajay is 12. Coming to find out, they're both taking Taekwondo. And Tajay was like engaged. He sat right beside me while I was on the laptop and we're looking at the fights and we're calling it. And, you know, it was so much Hooker's pressure, you know, in the outskirts or coming out the gates, rather, was so much so that my 12-year-old nephew looked at this fight and said, Dustin is getting dusted. Mm. And I'm like, whoa. So that threw up a red flag to me, to say, this kid is either going to fight, coach, or broadcast. But one way, shape, form, or fashion, I would not be surprised if this kid gets into a career in mixed martial arts. So, although Hooker applied that pressure from the outskirts or from the gate in this fight, ultimately championship pedigree and conditioning came through for the former interim lightweight champion, which granted him the unanimous decision win. Poirier landed nearly 80% of his strikes. I mean, Hooker, you know, kept pressure at bay with his range, but Poirier in that last round was able to overcome that and outland Hooker 61-20. The fight was so brutal, both were unable for media obligations and opted for immediate medical attention. What was your take on this fight of the year candidate?
I think it's very much a fight of the year candidate, definitely up there. The blows that Poirier took earlier, and I don't know if I'm saying his name right, so I apologize if I'm not.
Yeah, you
the
are.
The blows he took early, the blows Holland took early, okay. I was absolutely astonished that the fight went to a decision.
Man.
I thought for sure that one of them was going to absolutely get knocked out.
Yeah.
Knocked out cold to the point where you don't even gotta worry about no counting or anything. It's a wrap. I'm watching the fight and I'm like, how are either one of them still able to? I mean, that's just pure grit, heart, determination, not wanting to get. I mean, this is the kind of fight that all combat sport fans love. You don't even got to be a fan of mixed martial arts to love that fight. You know, it's the type of thing where, you know, a guy goes in the ring, he's going to give everything. Absolutely. Literally everything. To the point where when the fight's over, I can barely even walk back to the dressing room.
Right.
I mean, that fight was, I'm talking about, absolute bombs. I mean, they were trying to take each other's head off.
Yes.
Kicks to the leg, kicks to the side of the body, a few missed kicks to the face, a few takedowns, a few submission attempts that weren't successful for Poirier. And just in that last round, man, he was able to pull out something in that last round that Holland didn't have, because he was raining blows on him. And I'm like I said, man, it's the stuff legendary nights are made of, man. That's going to go down in UFC history as one of the best fights, pure striking. It wasn't nobody laying on the ground, you know, getting rest. Wasn't nobody, you know, doing too much hand fighting or too much trying to submission hold. There was some of that because that's a valuable part of the sport.
Yeah.
But there was so much savage brutality from the face strikes, man, up, and the accuracy of the punches, man. And Poirier was impressive because he was throwing punches from all angles. Like, if from a distance, if you got too close to him, I don't know how he able to get those punches off, but he would get off 2, 3, 4 punches if you get too close. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I think that I think Holland could have won that fight if he had a, if Holland had a played the distance game more.
It's Hooker, by the way, brother.
Hooker. Hey, Mark, you said Holland. No problem. So Hooker, if Hooker had a played the distance game more, used his jab more, and had a kind of not exhaust himself by throwing everything at once, but kind of played a little more defense and allowed Poirier to throw as many blows as he wanted to exhaust himself, then it would have been easy pickings for Hooker. But I'm telling you, man, I watched that fight the whole time like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them are going to need some serious medical attention after this. You cannot be the same after a fight like that.
No. Can't be. You can't. You can't.
Beautiful, beautiful match.
Yeah, it was. It was. And, you know, just to go back to what you said on them not being able to be the same after a fight like that, it definitely is going to affect them moving forward. It's going to change their outcome. Like, I honestly believe Poirier's loss to Khabib brought out another dog in him, because I've seen Dan Hooker knock guys out, as in the number one contender for the welterweight championship, Gilbert Burns. I mean, knocked him clean out when Burns was fighting at 155 pounds. I think, you know, him having Poirier having the benefit of fighting Khabib, although things didn't go the way he wanted it to, it brought another dog out of him. I feel like this is going to elevate the dogs in the both of them, especially when you look at a guy like Hooker, who himself said, win or lose, I can't lose, because, you know, look at where I am given the youth of my career. Not only that, but if I, you know, if I lose to Dustin Poirier, it doesn't damage me. You know, I still have so much room for improvement and so much room to grow that this is one of those things that I could bounce back from and, you know, still return to potential championship contention. And I'm like, that was an excellent outlook on his part. And we're going to see Dan Hooker bounce back from this, and we're going to see him put himself right back in the fold and eventually elevate himself. But as long as there's a Russian from Dagestan, to be exact, that wears a white wig and wrestles bears, as long as he still reigns upon the throne, I'm sorry, I can't see anybody beating.
I'm not picking against Khabib at all. And I'm gonna tell you something. I'm gonna tell you who don't want to see Poirier. Who don't want to see him.
Who's that?
The big mouth Irishman. He don't want to. Let the loudmouth Irishman, who is a amazing fighter, I'm not taking nothing away from him, but he's primarily a striker, just like Dustin is. Put them both in the octagon, and let's strike it out. He don't want to see that dude.
Now, I gotta, if you will, I want you to hop with me inside of the time travel machine, and we're going to take, you know, a trip back 7 years. Actually, Conor McGregor did fight Dustin Poirier, and he beat him. I believe, I want to say it was by way of knockout. Yeah, it was by way of knockout. But Dustin, back then, was not the fighter that he is now. I do believe today's Dustin would indeed cause Conor fits. And it wouldn't surprise me if he actually beat Conor, because, again, a lot of people don't realize Dustin is also a specialist in jiu-jitsu. And anybody that knows Conor knows that, you know, the ground game is his Achilles heel. So I would not be surprised at all if those two did it again and they got a rematch. But see, unfortunately, Conor is the type of guy where if he beats you, he doesn't want to give you a rematch. Yet if you beat him, he wants his rematch.
I'm going to tell you like this. The guy that I saw fight Saturday night would rip Conor's head off. I don't know how he was 7 years ago, because I wasn't in the sport 7 years ago, but I'm going to tell you right now. That dude last night, Saturday night.
That guy? Yeah.
He wants to fight.
Yeah. Oh, no question.
And he wants to fight anybody. I mean, he's 5'9". He fought a guy 6'3".
Yeah, Dustin wants the smoke. Trust.
Wants all the smoke. I mean, he fought a guy with a significant reach advantage over him.
Yes.
Who was bigger than him.
Yes.
And he dusted him. I mean, he didn't beat him down like one, two rounds and it's over. No. The other guy was very good. Hooker's not a slouch. However.
Absolutely.
He bombed him. Yeah. I'm going to tell you like this. You know, it's not fair for me to say he would absolutely whoop Connor because Connor is great. However, put them two in the ring and let's see.
The outcome would be way different than what it was 7 years ago. Make no mistake about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, moving forward. Question, did you see any other fights on the card that you would like to discuss?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right, I'll let you pick one.
My man Bozeman. Prelims.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Savage.
Yes.
Savage knockout.
Yeah.
Yeah. First round joint. Like, yeah. Bah, bah. Oh, okay. Oh, it's like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
That was one of the fights I have written down on my note sheet here because I love that fight. And the only other fight, which was, I don't know how he did this, Worthy. With the modified guillotine, round three.
Yes, yes.
He pulled that out of nowhere.
He really did.
Because when looking at the fight, I thought he was like almost kind of like, all right, well, I'm going to just wait it out to the decision. And then all of a sudden, guillotine. I'm like, where did he get that from? How did he have the energy for that? That was amazing. I mean, when you got a fight card, with prelims that are that exciting, and these are the prelims. It's not even to the main event card yet.
Right.
You have a product that is, you know what I mean? It's that work. You got that work. You got that savage on the street. That's
you do.
You got that powder. So, Tony Montana. So that product, that product is gonna move, man, because. You can watch your championship boxing match.
Yeah.
And everyone's waiting for the main event because they know 9 times out of 10 all the bouts that come before the main bout are not bouts you're gonna wanna see. You can miss them. You know, and you wait so long, it's after midnight when the main event comes on and you're half asleep, you know, but the main event should deliver and with UFC, you ain't got to wait until 11 to get fireworks or to 12 to get fire. You got fireworks all night. That's a huge difference. That's a huge difference between MMA and boxing. Preach. Fireworks, man.
Yeah.
What about you, man? How did you feel about the prelims?
So I thought the prelims were awesome. The one that stood out to me, that was Tanner Boser and Felipe Lenz. I mean, just out the gate, he just poured the heat on. He was unrelenting, and then he landed his 6-punch combo that sent Lenz to the ground, and from there caught him with hammer fists. And the ref was like, "That's enough." One thing a lot of people didn't know was that Boser, was the biggest underdog on the entire card. So the biggest underdog. Like, I'm not an expert on the numbers and how the whole plus minus thing work. I'm still learning that. Mm-hmm. But John Anik, Mike Bisping, and Dominic Cruz confirmed that he was the biggest underdog on the card. And for him to eradicate, you know, Felipe Lenz like that, remarkable. That's definitely going to get him attention. That's definitely going to get him positioned, you know, in the upper echelon or in the upper settings of future cards, if you will. Mm-hmm. Kama Worthy, for him to do what he did to Luis Pena. I mean, I knew we were in for a violent fight. Anybody that knows Luis Pena, aka Violent Bob Ross, for those of you who used to watch PBS once upon a time, it said that, you know, he looks like Bob Ross, God rest his soul. I knew that we were in for an absolute entertaining fight. I knew we were in for a slugfest, but, you know, for him to pull that guillotine out of nowhere, didn't see that coming. Here's something else about Kama you didn't see coming. Mm-hmm. And I just learned this doing the UFC post-fight show. Worthy, prior to fighting, was a male model. And he definitely, when I look at him, he definitely looked like he could have been inside the pages of J. Crew magazine. So, yes, he was a model. He was a model before strapping on the 4-ounce gloves.
Hey, that's interesting, man.
Very much so.
Well, no, wasn't too many photographers talking back to him.
At all. Not at all.
Did you say so nothing?
Right, nothing. I'm good. What you need? So the co-main event, we had Mike Perry defeat Mickey Gall via unanimous decision. And so, you know, they were high expectations going into this fight. It was indeed a fun fight. I got to give it to Mickey Gall because he's primarily a grappler. His striking has improved tremendously from when he beat CM Punk, former WWE wrestler, some time back when he made his UFC debut. But it's evident that, you know, he still got ways to go. And Mike Perry, you may not know the backstory here, but once upon a time, Mike Perry trained with one of the biggest, most acclaimed camps in UFC, or in MMA, that being the Jackson Wink camp, which comprises of Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn. That's the camp that actually John Bones Jones and Harley Holm train out of. So apparently, you know, there was some, you know, a friction between the two. And as a result, Mike Perry left that camp and decided to start his own fight camp. But the kicker is, during this fight, he only had a one-person corner who happened to be his girlfriend.
His girlfriend, right. Yeah.
His girlfriend. So, of course, he caught a lot of heat. You know what I mean? He was on the receiving end of some trolling. But what wasn't known was that his girlfriend has both a wrestling and boxing background. And so my question is, where are the trolls now? And I ask because they clown Mike Perry, you know, for his one woman, his one person corner being a woman, and you know, that in no way, shape, form, or fashion affected his ability to fight because he went out there and he pounded away at Gall. Not only that, but during the post-fight interview, if you saw this, he said, you know, for all of the trolls that trolled me, he let it be known and he, you know, put it out there that, yes, my girlfriend looked hot while she provided me with the stool and the water, and her timing was impeccable, you know? So, Mike Perry is he's one of the off-the-wall characters in the game, but he's entertaining, and if for no other reason, not only is he going to give you a fight, but he's going to provide you some comedic sound bites.
He definitely was his post-fight interview was funny. He was letting them know.
Yeah.
He was letting them know. I love seeing when people take a bet on themselves and they win.
Yes.
And then they get to rub it in the face of everyone else.
They're doubting them. Exactly.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it.
Absolutely.
That type of confidence in yourself, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and then it brings more attention to the sport, so... Cannot deny that whatsoever. In heavyweight action, Maurice Greene defeated Jan Vellante via third round arm triangle. Yet another unexpected result. Maurice Greene, he's a banger. He likes to throw his hands. And it took a while for Vellante to get into a striking groove. But when he did so with low kicks. And then unfortunately, there was an accidental eye poke, which actually, you know, turned the tide in favor of Greene. And Vellante landed a right hook that floored Greene, but he followed up with some ground and pound, pounding away at Greene. But unfortunately for Vellante, Greene's heart, you know, persevered, and Vellante tucking himself out in an effort to try to ground and pound Greene, and Greene saw an opportunity, and he secured the arm triangle and was able to get the submission.
Here's the thing, man. I have that also on my notes.
Yeah.
I love a smart fighter, man.
Yes. Yes.
I love an intelligent fighter. I think when people see combat sports, they don't really take in how much mental work goes into preparation for a bout or a match. So, in watching him submit his opponent, it came out of nowhere, just like that improvised guillotine that we were discussing from Worthy. It was a situation where I'm watching the fight and I'm like, okay, well, he's pretty much resigned to go to a decision or in the round, and then boom. But that's that type that comes from practicing at your craft, listening to your corner, and being yes. intelligent, knowing when your opponent is at his most vulnerable for mm-hmm. a specific type of attack. Yes. And that's an element of mixed martial arts, again, that it has over boxing, because you have those same type of things in boxing, but you take a specific moment in a match, and that seems like it's a lull in action, right? So the action is died mm-hmm. down. Now they're just on the ground, and you think that there is nothing going on. But what he's really doing is he's maneuvering his body to get this submission hold.
Yes,
and only absolutely. The people who are really MMA, you know, fanatics can actually see that and understand what's happening. And then all of a sudden, people like myself, who are novice, watching it, and it goes from, oh, there's not much going on, to, oh my God, he just submitted in a matter of a second. So, again, man, beautiful card, beautiful night, and it just seems like since they have had matches with no crowds because of the COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
the fights are so intense because the fighters just seem so much more focused. I mean, one can make an argument for no crowds ever again. I mean, really.
Yeah, yes, you could. I mean,
of course, you're not going to make that argument because there's money involved, right. But you can
yes.
you can make an argument for that.
Yeah, no question. No question about it. Let's see, where else? In middleweight action, Kyle Daukaus defeated Brendan Allen via unanimous decision. And Daukaus and Allen, they put everything out there. Nice blend of grappling and striking. Mm-hmm. Blood was shed. Momentum shifted repeatedly. They gave us quite a show. The fight wasn't without controversy, though, as the fight night broadcasting panel questioned the judging. I'm going to have to go back and watch it, truth be told, because, again, me seeing my nephews and, you know, for the first time in a little while, that kind of distracted me, so I really didn't give that fight the focus that I needed to. But, you know, there is controversy out there about it, and I definitely want to check it out. By chance, did you see it, or was that something that you'll have to go back and see?
I did not see it, but I did come in on the tail end of it when they were speaking regarding the controversial elements of the decision and the judges. But I saw that part of it, but I didn't see the actual fight itself.
Right. I gotcha. Understood. So I would definitely go back and check that out. Let's see. I think we're almost done. So Takashi Sato defeated Jason Witt via TKO by way of punches. I mean, early in the fight, it took him no time to finish out Witt whatsoever. And it's funny that I'm seeing a lot of name association, if you will. You know, I hear Takashi and I think to myself, Takashi 6'9". I'm not sure if that's any, you know, theme music that he would want to come out to moving forward, but, you know, I mean, maybe it's a thought to kind of liven things up, but there's no crowd right now to worry about, you know, so you really don't have to liven things up. And then the red skin in me, of course, I see Jason Witt. And then my mind, in a sense, goes to Jason Witten, the future Hall of Fame tight end for the Dallas Cowboys. But Sato got Witt out of there quickly. Then Jordan Griffin actually lost to Yusuf Zalal in a unanimous decision. It was a great fight, very entertaining. You know, the first takedown came at 1 minute 29 seconds into the opening round. The fight, you know, returned to the feet, and then the two, you know, were in a, you know, battle of octagon control. There were punching combinations that were thrown. Zalal was throwing a lot of knees. That dude loves, that's like his specialty, that's his bread and butter. That dude will throw a flying knee immediately. He continued to apply pressure. You know, it was just a back and forth struggle, very entertaining way to open up the fight. And do you want to take a wild guess as to what Yusuf Zalal's nickname is?
Oh, man, I don't even, these names, man, I'm scared to ask, but what is it?
Juicy J. So what I need moving forward is for this young man to come to the octagon with anything blaring through the speakers from Juicy J, 3-6 mm-hmm. Mafia, or mm-hmm. DJ Paul. We mm-hmm. need that moving forward. It only makes sense. It's only right.
It's, I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah.
it's perfect. I mean, if you're going to keep the name Juicy J,
right,
and you're not a porn star and you don't have a jury card, you either need to be in porn or you need to have a jury curl or you have to be a fighter. That's the only way you can get away with using that nickname.
Yes, I agree. Agreed.
Juicy J. That's it. That's Juicy J. Wow. That's
I can't argue. Yeah, I can't argue with
these
you.
These names, man. Woo.
Hey, man. Dude, the nickname game in UFC is quite entertaining.
It is.
Quite entertaining.
It's ridiculous.
So, performance of the night bonuses went to Kay Hansen and Julian DeRosa for their individual performances. And obviously, fight of the night went to Dustin Poirier and Dane Hooker, each of them getting $50,000 as a result. So we're going to move forward now into our Grand and Pound segment of the show. First up is John Jones begins serving his 4-day house arrest as part of his DWI plea deal as a result of, you know, his latest arrest back in March. So this just speaks on how light news is this week in the world of mixed martial arts, because first and foremost, all of us to some degree are on house arrest.
True.
As a result of COVID-19.
True.
But just to, you know, give you all some inside information on the matter. Reigning UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones checked himself into MDC on Friday to begin his court-ordered 4-day service in a community custody program. Per a report by KRQE News 13 in Albuquerque, requirements include all defendants will wear an ankle bracelet which tracks movement in and out of the home of the inmate on CCP. Clients must remain at home unless permitted by their tracker to be elsewhere. Failure to comply will result in a loss of CCP. All defendants will be subject to random drug testing. If a defendant shows a positive result for any illegal narcotic or alcohol, they will lose their CCP privileges and will be returned to CCP for disciplinary action. The presiding judge in the case will be notified of the violation. And finally, all inmates are subject to random visits to their place of residence or place of employment by the community custody program monitor. You have any thoughts on Jones's current condition?
Man, I really just want him to, whatever it is that he needs to rectify in terms of his addiction problems.
Yes.
I just want him to get that worked out, man. He's just too... he's been too dominant over the years for his career to end via addiction. So I really just want him to get that worked out, man. He needs to... He clearly needs some professional help. Yes. I'm not really sure what type of help, because I'm not really in a position to judge, but I'm just saying, I just want you to get help, man. You know, he reminds me a lot of, in terms of like the back and forth with his addiction issues and legal issues, Josh Gordon in the NFL. A lot of, you know, back and forth. The difference is Josh Gordon's talent has been on display for only a few seasons, and he's been great when he has played, but you know, his addiction issues is just preventing him from being able to stay in the NFL for extended periods of time. And the reason I brought up Josh Gordon, because he was on my mind because Washington is talking about on ESPN in terms of like an article I read, Washington is considering signing him if he gets reinstated, right? So I'm like, that was on my mind. But yeah, that's what John Jones makes me think of, right? So the addiction issues, and of course when we see greatness and greatness is interrupted by addiction issues, you always think, you know, about the various people in sports history that have had to deal with that, from Daryl Strawberry to Len Bias. Obviously Len Bias didn't have an addiction issue. It was a one-time thing, but unfortunately it was just too much for him, so he passed away. And you have that lingering, you know, sadness of what could have been, right?
Yeah.
So what could have been, I mean, Len Bias was great.
He was.
And you have that lingering sadness as a community sports community of what could have been, and being from the DMV as a DMV community of, you know, being so proud to see one of our own, so to speak, get on in that way. So yes, hopefully John Jones can get his act together. He's too great to allow his career to be to allow the tail end of his career, because, you know, let's face it, he only got a few more years left. To allow the tail end of his career to go down this way would be tragic, just so tragic.
Now, I want to go back to Lynn Byers, as I'm reminded that there is the 30 for 30 special on ESPN that I need to sit down and watch. So there is conflicting narrative as to how his death took place. You know, there's narrative that says he had a cocaine addiction, mm-hmm. and then there's narrative that says his first hit of cocaine, he died. So, you know, if we could get some clarity on that, you know, was it a one-time hit for him, or was it indeed an addiction that led to his eventual death?
You know, it's, you know, there has been, at least locally, there's been different stories about that. Mm-hmm. Some mm-hmm. people say addiction, some people say one-time thing. The official stories that I've read in terms of from sports journalists have not classified him as being an addict, or at least I haven't read a story out of a sports journalist that have classified him as being an addict. The stories that I've read about it was that it was a one-time thing. And in the 30 for 30 special, they didn't seem to put forth that theory that he was addicted to it. The theory was more so it was a one-time thing.
Okay.
So I, officially, I don't know what, you know, the majority of the reporting that I've seen is that it was a one-time thing.
Gotcha. All right, moving forward, John Jones takes up yet another portion of the ground and pound. He says he has no interest in fighting in the UFC until he gets paid what he believes he's worth. While UFC President Dana White routinely calls Jones the GOAT, he has scoffed at the financial demands made by the longest reigning champion in the history of the 205-pound division. "I got nothing to lose being the position that I'm in right now," Jones said while speaking on the Wild Ride, a podcast hosted by Jackass's Steve-O. "No, I don't want to fight soon. I have no interest in fighting in the UFC until I get paid what I believe I'm worth. A lot of fans will continue to watch the UFC and support the UFC, and I have no problem with that. I just ordered the last pay-per-view myself. But I think it's really powerful when you stand up for something that you believe is right. I think that eventually the UFC will realize that they're being stubborn. They realize they have to do, that they do have a special athlete, excuse me. I think they eventually meet me halfway." Part of White's criticism came to jump. Part of White's criticism when it came to Jones's financial demands was claiming that he asked for money comparable to boxer Deontay Wilder, who reportedly made around $30 million for his most recent fight. Jones denied that he had ever asked for that much money to fight again, and refutes claims that he's trying to gouge UFC, for more than what he's worth to them. Any thoughts on this standoff between White and Jones?
As you know, it's White, Dana White has all the power, because there's no union, and there's no parity in the sport that can rival UFC. Mm-hmm. So Dana White is really sitting on all the cards. My hope is that the fighters will unionize, so that isn't the case moving forward, and you can have a more balanced pay scale.
Agreed.
Especially in such a brutal sport, because you're putting your health and all of those things on the line. So that's kind of like where I'm at with it. I totally agree with him that he should be paid. I generally agree anyway, though, with athletes when they speak on getting paid what they're worth. And they're not being paid what they're worth at the mm-hmm. moment. I generally tend to side with labor on that, because labor is always being shortchanged by the ownership class, and the ownership class is always acting like they just can't afford it. They have so much.
Yes.
I mean, it's, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, come up off some of that money. You know, that's my opinion on that. Come up off some of that money. I mean, John Jones has done a lot for the sport.
Yep. He has. He's done a tremendous amount for the sport. So has Henry Cejudo and Jorge Masvidal and Conor McGregor. And just to go back to Jorge, which is an excellent stance that he's taken on the matter. We get that the UFC, you know, is missing out financially as a result of, you know, no gate money coming in. We get that. But when you build an adult playground in Abu Dhabi and you call it Fight Island, why shouldn't fighters question where their increase in pay is? I mean, and you know, some people may put out the narrative that suggests where UFC had this budgeted in advance. Yeah, let's say they did. Why didn't UFC prioritize budgeting increased fighter pay over Fight Island? I mean, there are more than enough venues throughout this world for the UFC to host events. Now, make no mistake about it. If, you know, we get back to that place of normalcy where the borders are open and we could travel again. Mm-hmm. Oh, Fight Island is on my bucket list. I want all of the Fight Island smoke on the, you know, being on the beach where a fight can take place live. I want all of that. But what I don't want is for fighters who get in that cage and risk their lives night in and night out to not be properly compensated. Because if not for them, Dana White and whoever the stockholders and co-owners are, guess what? Your sport wouldn't be where it is today. Make no mistake about it, Dana White is a marketing genius. Nobody does it better in the sport than Dana White when it comes to marketing and promoting your product. But again, you wouldn't have anything to promote if those fighters weren't strapping up and stepping inside of that octagon, fight in and fight out.
Nobody coming to see Dana White. Ain't nobody buying pay-per-views for Dana White.
Absolutely.
You know, so with all due respect to his business acumen, I mean, yeah, pay the people right, man. Pay the people, you know, what's fair. That doesn't seem like a difficult task to me.
I agree wholeheartedly. You talk about, I'm missing it. Oh man, why am I not grasping in that? But roughly, you were talking about how, you know, UFC is the lead brand in the sport. And while that is true, there are two other organizations that are on UFC's heels. Bellator, which I think could actually draw even closer to the UFC if they move forward with an overall media deal with CBS Sports. I don't know if you remember, but a few episodes back, I had discussed how Bellator has a deal with CBS Sports where every Wednesday they air a show called Bellator Recharge, where basically they just rerun a classic Bellator card. Now, my hope moving forward is that will, you know, blossom into a full-time exclusive media coverage deal where we can see pre-fight and post-fight shows building up forthcoming cards, because I think that's all Bellator needs. They just need, you know, shows in place to promote their product more, because the current deal with DAZN, I'm not a fan of at all. Like, if I didn't have the Bellator app, I would be absolutely clueless as to what's going on with Bellator. Like, so if they get the marketing behind it that it needs, then yeah, UFC better, you know, be checking their rear view. Also, ONE Championship, which is based out of Bangkok or Singapore, I can't remember, but they are considered the UFC, and I guess you could say they're the UFC of the Asian region of the world, if you will. It is humongous in Japan, in Bangkok, in Singapore. It's a big deal, and you know, that's actually where Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson is. He left the UFC in a trade for Ben Askren, and one of the reasons why he agreed to that was because ONE Championship puts a lot of emphasis on the smaller fighters, where UFC once upon a time was considering removing the 125 pound division, the division that Demetrius Johnson once reigned supreme in. I'm mentioning them because word has come forth from MMA Fighting's Alexander Lee that ONE has announced its return with the July 31st event in Bangkok. So after 5 months on the sidelines due to coronavirus pandemic precautions, One Championship is on its way back to business. The promotion announced Friday that it will hold its first major event since February when it hosts a show on July 31st in Bangkok, Thailand. This past weekend saw One hold two Hero Series events in China, cards that are designed to showcase up-and-coming fighters from Asia. The July event will presumably feature the stars of One that have been out of action for the first half of 2020, though no bouts were officially announced for the show titled One, No Survivor. Some marquee matchups that were postponed due to COVID-19 shutdown includes One flyweight Grand Prix winner and former UFC champion Demetrius Johnson, as earlier mentioned, versus current 135-pound champion Adriano Moraes, which is considered a super fight, and Ong Leo Sang defending his 205-pound title against Vellante Big Dash, both of which were supposed to happen on the inaugural Affinity event on April 10th. The second Infinity event on May 29th would have seen Eddie Alvarez, former UFC, Bellator, and Strikeforce champion, Christian Lee, Brandon Vera, former One Championship heavyweight champion and former UFC light heavyweight title contender, and Arjan Bular in action. In April, One CEO Chatri Sichadwan, I hope I pronounced that correctly, announced that all scheduled events will be postponed until the end of May. One's last major event, One Championship King of the Jungle, was a kickboxing and MMA show in Singapore, headlined by Janet Todd defending Stamp Fairtex by split decision in the 115-pound Muay Thai Championship bout. So I've seen some One Championship fights, and I'm highly impressed with their product. The problem is, I saw those fights as a result of replays. Watching One Championship live, considering they're based in Singapore, yeah, good luck with that. Unless you're an absolute night owl, because, yeah, trying to stay up for those are tough. So my hope is that I can find an alternate way of catching them. But I am a fan of the One Championship product. And, you know, they put more emphasis on the smaller fighters, but they have a variety of weight classes. They even have a 105-pound women's weight division, and I think that's considered the Antum weight, which is smaller than straw weight at 115 pounds. Do you have any familiarity whatsoever with One Championship? Or, you know, based on what we've discussed, are you by chance intrigued of seeing what that product has to offer?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm all for all combat sports, man. You know, I love my combat sports. So I'm just not very familiar with that product. But yeah, of course. You know, I mean, I think a lot of these, it's a good point that you brought up earlier, a lot of these other organizations that are in competition with UFC just needs the opportunity to get their product in front of more eyeballs. And so, again, that just kind of speaks to Dana White's business acumen. He's dominating the space. He's taking all the air in the space to the point where if you're not attuned to the sport, as anything more than a casual fan, you don't really realize that there are all these other outlets that are also putting out a good product because you don't get a chance to see them on the mainstream media avenues that UFC travels on. So, yeah, absolutely, I am interested in it. They need to figure out a way to get it into more eyeballs.
Indeed, and once they do, then yeah, Dana White, buckle up. You know what I mean? UFC, buckle up. You're not the only show in town. You're not the only show in town. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go into the latest edition of This Week in MMA History, and then we're going to close things out with the final decision. This is Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast with Ant and Deontay. Stay tuned. All right, so we're going to go in here and just banging on out. You ready?
Yep.
Cool. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast with Ant and Deontay. Once again, we can be found on social media at Wrestling POV Podcast on Facebook and at MMA POV Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And we can be heard on the following streaming platforms: iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. So we're going to go into This Week in MMA History. June 21st, 2002, the original Ultimate Fighter Diego Sanchez made his NBA debut. So earlier I had talked about Mike Perry, who left the Jackson Wink camp to go ahead and fight moving forward with one-person corner. But at least his one-person corner, albeit a female, at least she has a combat sports background by way of boxing and wrestling. Diego Sanchez, God bless him, and if you ever get a chance, just look up his ring entrances and his post-fight and pre-fight interviews. Yeah, he's a bigger character than Platinum Perry, make no mistake about it. So he, too, left Jackson Wink MMA, thinking that there was too much focus on John Bones Jones. And he's now training with, are you ready? A one-person corner who is a yoga instructor. Here's your homework for this week.
Okay.
I want you to go to YouTube, and I want you to look up Diego Sanchez's trainer. And the way this dude skips around the heavy bag and prances and pirouettes.
Wow.
Pure comedy. So that's your homework assignment this week. Just check out his training methods. Jeez. I promise you, you'll be entertained. I guarantee it.
MMA just is not short of personalities, man. Yeah.
Not at all.
I guess you got to be a little nutty to be an MMA fighter anyway, though.
I guess you do. You
Good
have
Lord,
to.
Lord, man.
Yeah. 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 One way or another, you have to see this guy's training methods. It's the stuff legends are made of, man. Yeah. So back to this week in MMA history. June 21st, 2012. Fedor Emelianenko earns his 26th stoppage victory of his career when he knocks out Pedro Rizzo in just 84 seconds. So before Khabib Nurmagomedov, when it comes to legendary Russian fighters, there was Fedor Emelianenko. Mm. So if you ever get a chance, check him out, and I promise you, you will be amazed at his dominance in the game. I promise you. June 22nd. I forgot the year. My apologies. But I want to say that was 2006. Joe Rogan made his first appearance as a commentator for the UFC, and he's considered by many the greatest MMA analyst of all time. What memories do you have of Joe Rogan prior to his ascension into the UFC?
Wasn't he like a stand-up comedian or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't really, you know what, man, I'm gonna be real. I don't like Joe Rogan.
Okay.
I feel like, can you explain why? Yeah, because he gets, for whatever reason, people go on his podcast, and he gives these interviews that people find insightful, because as an interviewer, he doesn't know anything in terms of really who the people are beyond their public persona or what they may have done in terms of like their work, and he asks these questions that are just it's such a dry meaningless conversations that he has, and he also embraces a lot of that Alex Jones type of garbage, and a lot of that he embraces a lot of people who have extremely anti-black views, I'm not feeling him, man. I think he's, you know what, I'm gonna be real with you. I think he's mediocre as fuck. Mm. I think he is extremely mediocre.
All right.
But because of who he is, you know, people overlook that.
Absolutely.
I'm going to just put it like this. You couldn't have anybody that looked like me or you occupy his position. And I leave it at that.
You might want to preach that portion of the sermon one more time.
You can't have anybody that looks like me or you.
Uh-huh.
As mediocre as he is, and occupy the same position. He is a good MMA analyst. I'm not going to take that from him.
Yes.
He's very good at being an MMA analyst. But all those other ventures, the comedy, the podcast he does, his podcast is number one.
It is
fucking mediocre. It is trash.
And he just signed a multi-million dollar deal with Spotify, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Like some insane 30-something plus million dollar deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, my brother. And there was a clip circulating Twitter of him having a guest on discussing Obamagate. And he actually is giving that nonsense credence. You know, he actually has said on more than one occasion, you know, I'm Trump's my guy. Like, he's a Trump guy.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, he said he would vote for Bernie Sanders, but since Sanders didn't win the nomination, he probably is going to end up voting for Trump or some statement of that type. So he's mediocre, man. And he plays with, he toys with very serious issues. And he tries to play the, I see things from multiple perspective game. Nah, bruh. Mm-hmm. There is no other perspective on Obamagate. It's made up bullshit. Mm. So to me, like I said, man, if he wasn't white, he wouldn't occupy the position he does in terms of pop culture. Not as an MMA analyst. I want to separate that.
Let's be clear. Absolutely.
As an MMA analyst, he's great.
Yes, he is.
In terms of the position that he occupies in pop culture beyond MMA or outside of MMA, I think he's mediocre. And I'm also, let me say this too. I want to make this clear. Okay.
All right.
I'm not saying that people who do one thing cannot engage in political discussion outside of what it is that they do as a main source of income. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that if you do choose to do that, know what you're talking about.
There it is.
That's all I'm saying. And that's my opinion on his work outside of MMA. That's why I don't like him. Personally, I don't know him personally, but the idea of a mediocre person, white male, occupying such an outsized position in pop culture, it's offensive to me. That's my point.
I agree with you. That's your POV, and you have every right to express it. Yeah. Also, you might not remember this, but he once upon a time was the host of the famed NBC reality show Fear Factor.
I remember that, right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yep.
Also a mediocre product. Like, I'm not saying it was Joe Rogan's product to you know, but come on, man. You know, I give you money if you eat these spiders. Like, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that?
For me, the biggest Fear Factor highlight was when Tyrone Biggums appeared on it by way of the Chappelle Show. And once again, as I said about Martin, to open up the show, if you're not familiar with the Chappelle Show, please do your homework. Do your research. All right, moving forward. June 22nd, the same day, 32-year-old Chuck Liddell competes in his first ever UFC main event and defeats Vitor Belfort by way of unanimous decision. June 23rd, 2002, Don Fry and Yoshihiro Takayama had one of the wildest slugfests in the history of the sport. Deontay, if you do a Google search for Don Fry versus Yoshihiro Takayama, the most common picture that you're going to see is the two of them clutching each other around the back of their necks and just throwing bombs at one another. Like, it's literally something out of a movie or pro wrestling. It's one of the most iconic pictures in mixed martial arts history. June 23rd, that same day, 2007, after years of fighting in Miami backyards, Kimbo Slice makes his amateur MMA debut and finishes former boxing mainstay, Ray Mercer. Yeah, I'm not sure if you actually saw that bout. I did not see that, but I would definitely make it my business to check that one out.
It was an MMA match or a boxing match?
MMA, amateur MMA match, him and Ray Mercer.
Ray Mercer, huh?
Yep.
Ray Mercer used to get it done in the ring, man.
He did. Yes, he did. Okay. Yes, he did.
Maybe he was tight on some money or something. I don't know.
That's a possibility. Or maybe felt, you know...
Might have been an easy win or something, right?
Maybe. Or felt explorative. Who knows? June 24th, 2006, Michael Bisping defeated Josh Haynes by TKO to win Season 3 of The Ultimate Fighter. That same day in 2017, Douglas Lima makes his first defense of his Bellator welterweight title when he defeated Lorenz Larkin by way of unanimous decision. June 26, 2010, Fabricio Werdum ended the legendary winning streak of Fyodor Emelianenko, who I just spoke of earlier in the segment. And in 2011, a year after being on the verge of getting knocked out multiple times, Chuck Congo pulls off one of the greatest comebacks in UFC history when he finishes Pat Barry. That's another fight that you should look at. I mean, he had Barry had Congo on spaghetti legs numerous times throughout the fight. And for Chet Congo to dig deep and come back and knock Pat Barry out, the stuff legends are made of. To this day, I still can't believe he, you know, was able to come back the way he did. It was absolutely jaw-dropping and awe-inspiring.
I love that stuff, man. I love that dig down deep and grit it out type of stuff. I love it.
Yes, it was definitely that.
What's up, everybody? This is MMA Hall of Famer Randy the Natural Couture. Listen to Ant and Deontay on the MMA POV podcast. That's an order.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's about that time for us to put a bow on episode 10 of the Mixed Martial Art Point of View podcast. This is the final decision. Good sir, would you like to go first?
Absolutely.
And I close out? Or okay.
Go Absolutely. Ahead. So my final decision today is definitely going to be on some things going on in our world, and okay. How we should see it. Right now, you cannot ignore what's happening in the streets in terms of at the grassroots level, in terms of people showing up to demonstrate, protest, and be activists for what can only be described as wholesale change of law enforcement culture and the criminal justice aspect of our world altogether. I would say that now is the time for any politician, especially on the Democratic side, because that is the side that always gets the majority of the African American support. There are historical reasons for that, but because African Americans support the Democrats so much, it's time for Democratic politicians to get on board with the various cries of the activist community, the organizers community, and calling for wholesale change to the criminal justice structure.
Yes.
Culture, law enforcement culture in the United States of America, especially as it pertains to minorities, specifically African Americans. Now is not the time for any politician, but especially a Democratic politician who gets the majority support from the vast majority of support from African American people, especially African American women. And now is not the time for fence sitting. You need to be aggressively pursuing these changes that the grassroots are calling for. And I think that if you are not on the side of where the momentum is, I think that when it comes around time for your reelection or your primary, you may find yourself out of a job because the people are tired of waiting for change or incremental small change. The people are really hungry for a new way of doing things in terms of law enforcement and criminal justice in this country. And, you know, I think that is where the pressure and where the focus of any Democratic politician needs to be, on wholesale changes of those institutions in the criminal justice system, specifically things like the culture of law enforcement. So defunding, abolishing, doing away with the way we conceive of criminal justice in this country is where the momentum is. I would advise any Democratic politician looking to get majority support from African Americans that they need to be on that side of the fence. And sitting on the middle, it isn't going to work anymore. No one's going to show up to vote for you if you're sitting on the middle of an issue that is literally for Black people in this country, Black Americans, life or death. It's not going to work anymore. That's my final decision, my brother. I swing it over to you.
So in listening to your final decision and, you know, the call for change in the criminal justice system and, you know, other avenues and things that affect the black community, the one word that kept ringing out to me was injustice, injustice, injustice. And there's an injustice that I absolutely have to touch on. That would be the one that was done to Lavina Lynn Johnson. Lavina Lynn Johnson was born July 27th, 1985. She died July 19th, 2005. She died 8 days before her 20th birthday. She was an EN for the United States Army. She was found dead in her tent. Her death was controversially ruled as a suicide, contrary to the evidence of rape, battery, and gunshots, which were not self-inflicted. Many believe that the Department of Defense, have covered it up. Much love to my all-time favorite media outlet, news media outlet, Democracy Now, for being the outlet that stood up and actually took on this story and put the injustice out there. CNN, Fox, CBS, NBC, any news outlet, you name it, none of them wanted to touch that story with a 10-foot pole dipped in disaffected. I mean no harm, but enough of the bullshit. Justice for Lavina Johnson. This young woman has been dead 15 years. Her family is still void of answers. And you want to put on a front as if this young lady killed herself. What person will cause trauma to their vaginal area? What woman will cause trauma to her vaginal area prior to killing herself? Don't insult my intelligence. Don't insult our intelligence. Right. Enough of this bullshit, and let's proceed with getting justice for Lavina Johnson. I do apologize for ending on a heavy note, but this story, even though I never met Lavina Johnson or her family a day in their lives, it just became personal for me. And I'm just disgusted that this woman has been deceased for 15 years, and we're not even close to any type of resolution on the matter.
You know, it just kind of goes back to what I was saying too. Thank you for that too, because that's crucial. That's important. But yeah, it goes back to what I said. The time has come for the politicians that we support with our voting capital to stop sitting on the fence. Yep. We got to start showing out and advocating for things that we want to be done. I mean, you can't tell me if Ms. Johnson was white, it wouldn't go like that. You know what I mean?
Already.
Like, yep. Or it would already be like this.
Yep.
Because we both know that's not true.
Yep.
We know that's not true. So, I'm just kind of like, I'm with you, man. I feel you. I feel you. That is a great, great final decision. And I feel you.
I appreciate you, brother. So, ladies and gentlemen of the Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast community, I do apologize for ending on a heavy note, but I'm just disgusted. But overall, we did have fun today. We plan to continuously have fun. And thankfully, there are no live fights for me to cover, for us to cover this week. So we could take a break. We could be easy. And then we'll be back at it on next week in preparation of UFC 251, Usman versus Burns. Once again, this is Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast. I am your host, Ant. Alongside me is my cornerman and training partner,
Deontay.
Take care. God bless. Be safe and be easy.
Be easy, y'all.